Hello, and welcome to the Radio Check Podcast, Life in the Concert Touring Industry, where we'll be speaking with and interviewing the best talent in the business, taking not only a deep dive into what it takes to put on a world-class show, but also life on the road and sharing experiences that span the globe, highlighting the people that are responsible for making your favorite artists look and sound great. My name is Matt Kanzi, and your host on this podcast is Chris Kanzi, a 40-year veteran in the live music touring industry. Over the years, Chris has traveled the globe several times over and has escalated through the ranks, bringing him to the top of his profession. He has established hundreds, if not thousands, of connections with other industry professionals, artists, and musicians. This podcast is your backstage pass to what happens behind the scenes and on the road when traveling and working with some of the world's top musicians. So sit back and enjoy. And we're back on this beautiful afternoon. And it seems like we're on a tear, brother Chris. We've been kind of, you know, getting these things done on a weekly basis for the past month or two. How are you doing today, man?
I'm good. I guess that just shows you how little I have to do in my life these days, you know, but no, this is great. I really appreciate, you making the time for this, you know, because this has been really fun for me and everybody we have on. So how are you? How's things with you?
Oh, great. I mean, the weather's breaking here up in the Northeast. We're in the 50s, maybe even in the 60s a little bit. The sun is shining, the snow's melted, the crocuses are popping. So, pretty happy, you know, being an avid mountain biker and the trails becoming a little bit more available to kind of get back out into the woods and for me to do my nice thing. So I'm pretty excited about that. So
nice. Yeah, it's good. You know, I mean, I know we always start these conversations about, you know, talking about vaccines and COVID and all that. But, you know, again, it's been really great seeing how things are moving along. You know, I mean, I can only speak for, you know, what's going on in the States, but, you know, we're, you know, 10% of our population is fully vaccinated. So, I mean, you know, that's, you know, it's moving. Oh, actually, yeah, 10%. Yeah, I think it's about right. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think Biden's original kind of promise was, you know, 1 million people a day. So 100 million in his first 100 days. And I think we're actually averaging 2 million a day.
Yeah. So yeah. We hit 3 million one day. Yeah. That's good.
Well, that's amazing. So, you know, you mentioned as far as like the whole, like, you know, lack of a better term, politics or kind of what's going on here in the States. But one of the things I've really, really appreciated over the past, you know, especially the month, is we've had a lot of international guests to, you know, on this podcast, UK and Australia specifically, and we get to get another perspective beyond, you know, life in the concert touring industry, but also how a person's life can be impacted by the coronavirus. But I'm really excited because we have a guest that I've never met before. I don't know this individual, and I always love going into these things because I have no expectation. I don't know. And so, because a handful of people I do know, and so I can get a sense. But so I'm really excited about today's guest. So please, you know, who do we got? Who'd you line up for us today?
Well, let me give you a little background. You know, as production managers, we do lots of these Zoom calls, you know, with other, you know, touring professionals gather on Zoom calls to talk about, you know, anything from resetting our industry to improving our industry. And this is our guest is somebody that I got to know during or through that platform. And listening to her talk and listening to how she, you know, presents herself and her ideas, it's someone I felt very like-minded with. And after talking to her, you know, I wanted to see if she wanted to do this podcast because her takes are very refreshing. And you know, I just knew we could have a really great conversation. So coming from the United Kingdom, we have my new friend, Keely Myers. Hello, Keely.
Hello, good afternoon, evening, where we are here. Yeah, hi.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. Yeah, I'm so happy to have you here. But I think it's only fair because we've got this elephant in the room that I really want to get rid of and just get it over with. As we talked, you know, you're our first female woman guest on Radio Check. And, you know, I'm not going to make excuses or give any reasons why, but you're our first one. And yeah. What do you think about that?
Well, Yeah, I was surprised when that was one of the things that you said to me in our email exchanges early on, that you struggled a bit of trying to find females to come and have a chat with you. And my initial question was, who are you asking? But because I know plenty of females that will come and chat with you, and I'm sure I might be the first, but I'm sure I'm not going to be the last after, you know, today, you know, come to speak with you both on the podcast. But yeah, I mean, I've been in this industry, you know, 20 years now, and I, like many other females in this industry, have had our journeys of you know, where how we've moved throughout our careers and stuff. But it's not really a surprise to us that we are a minority along with, you know, other marginalized groups. That's part of the work that I've been doing during this pandemic, getting together with, as you said, like-minded industry leading individuals. It started with production managers and now has kind of progressed into other, everybody, through vendors, agents, touring professionals, be it production, tour managers, sound, lights, whatever department they might fulfill. So yeah, that's been part of the tour production group TPG that we've been specifically holding weekly, well, started off weekly and now has gone to every couple of weeks sessions about how are we going to improve the lack of diversity within our industry, touring specifically, when we go back, amongst talking about mental welfare and also sustainability, you know, areas that we feel strongly that we need improving, along with you know, aligning with the rest of the world, really, you know, but specifically within touring, because it's the industry that we know and we love and we want to improve it. And it always just surprised me a little bit how we're meant to be such a bohemian kind of, we live slightly outside of the laws of society, as it were, yet we don't, we still kind of follow the same, you know, same socialist kind of environments of how we, of when we look at our workforce particularly.
Yeah, I so agree. And in this conversation, you know, diversity is so important. You know, we did this ILMC IPM roundtable the other day. You and I were privileged enough to be on there, and which moderated by Debbie Taylor, which I thought it was pretty great.
Yeah, absolutely.
But leading up to our diversity conversation, some of the points I made that, you know, when we were kids, you know, there weren't a lot of women. And if there were, they were backstage, they were in production offices, they were doing hair and makeup, they were not really, you know, they didn't break into the boys' club, you know, as it said. But now they're everywhere on the arena floor. You know, they're driving trucks and buses, they're in lighting, they're in sound, they're everywhere. If, you know, and you know what, in a lot of ways, they're a lot better than a lot of the men I work with, you know, so, but, you know, the point I want to make now is, you know, we're working towards diversity, and just because we have women doing sound, and just because we have some women doing lighting, you know, if there's 100 people on the crew and there's 10 of them that are women, you know, that's still only 10%. You know, that's not diverse. You know, I think we can do a lot better. You know, and there are different ways to approach it. You know, whether it's through training or through outreach or whatever, but I don't think we're diverse, and I think we have a lot of work to do in becoming diverse.
It's very apparent. I mean, you know, I think as a female, you get used to seeing when, for example, we first started having conversations within the TPG, I looked out at the screen, and yet again, in many scenarios in my life, I was one of the only female at one stage, you know, on that screen. But here's the other thing, you know, when we're not just talking about females, we've got to talk, when we're talking about females, about people of color and non-binary and trans people, these are all, and also, you know, people that may have disabilities too. So we have to focus on diversifying our crew throughout, and it not just being white cis males, you know.
Yeah, so agreed.
Because, you know, the more we diverse, the more better flavor we're going to get within touring, and different opinions, and people come from different places, and that can only be a good thing. To have different opinions and people that come from different walks of life to be able to offer to the creative process.
Yeah, I so agreed. Let's talk a little bit about your TPG diversity sessions. You were saying earlier that you have them every few weeks. I was lucky enough to be invited into one, which I thought was fascinating, really, really fascinating. And part of it, you know, and I think I mentioned this to you, everybody on that Zoom call was like-minded. But still, having said that, you're trying to create new norms. You're trying to create an environment that us as production managers or people involved in production have to start thinking in a different way of how we speak in general, whether it's to each other or whether it's to a diverse group. And I think it's a good practice to start now. I know one thing that's important to you is, you know, gender neutrality, you know, and I believe in gender neutrality as well. You have your safe space agreement that you read beforehand, just leading into it, yeah, which I think is a good practice. And in those safe space agreements, you mentioned a lot of things that are, you know, important to, you know, looking at the world with different eyes, new eyes of how to see the people around you, you know. And I think a big part of it is, you know, pronouns. You know, you would like everybody to readdress themselves on the screen with their pronouns, whether it be she, her, hers, or his, him, you know. And I think that's a good, or they, correct? It's a good practice. But the thing that blew me away the most about that diversity session was your guest, Glenn Fussell from Sync the Pink. I thought he was impressive beyond impressive, you know. And you know, I'm a fan of his. I don't really know much about him, you know. I think he was just an incredible individual. And I'll let you do most of the explaining here, but he did tell this one story. Because Sync the Pink is a makeshift group of either gay or trans or LGBTQ group that does performances, and he told the story about meeting a sound guy and talking to the sound guy one-on-one, and the sound guy was, you know, it's a local sound guy, probably has not been in that environment very much, and he was talking, you know, to him about audio for the show. And then he brought him backstage into the dressing room, into the, you know, environment that he was not used to being in. And he kind of crumbled and fell to pieces, not because he was bigoted or anything like that, but he's just not used to being in that environment. And I thought Glenn was just blew my mind and how he walked everybody through what happened there.
Yeah, I think that was what Glenn was talking about, and that was around the language and not being, I think, you know, what appears to be a stumbling block for a lot of people is being unsure about how to address somebody or what they see as a language, and that then becomes a barrier, and therefore they'd rather just keep quiet or sometimes in some cases do the opposite, you know, and kind of they don't want to make a mistake, they don't want to offend, they don't want to make a mistake. And I think Glenn's kind of point was that it was like, we all make mistakes, you know, and that's how we learn, and it's about talking and you know, coming together with that. So yeah, I think that was his scenario, to try and he was talking about to try and put the sound person at ease. But I think, you know, also Glenn runs the festival Mighty Hoopla as well, which is actually going to be hopefully running this year. But But also Antonia, who was also on that session as well, who was a part of Stonewall here in the UK, the UK version, and does a lot of training around pronouns and, you know, had also some really great points as well that was being made. And they vibed off of each other quite well, I thought, on that
session. Yeah, Antonia Lyons was also very impressive. The group that they have, which brings young LGBTQ kids into the entertainment environment, trying to find positions for them in the arts, not necessarily backstage at a rock and roll show, but, you know, maybe working with a sculptor or maybe, you know, working somewhere in the arts, you know, and I really think that is a great lift. You know, that is to have that person out there. If you know, if I'm, you know, in my bedroom lost and I don't know what to do with myself and I'm young and I'm impressionable, you know, everybody needs somebody to look up to, whether it's a mentor or just somebody who just willing to give a helping hand. And man, you know, how important would that be for just one young individual to be introduced into a world that they admire from afar and feel like they can be part of it? So, and yeah, Antonia is very, very, another very impressive person, in my opinion.
Yeah, there are some, what that Antonia is doing, but also that in addition to that, we see, have existed for quite a while, but maybe we're now have our blinkers off a bit more and purposely looking for this. There are so many incentives and programs out there that are, you know, helping people and helping kids. Well, first of all, one of the things about our industry is that we've been so cloak and dagger for so long. It's been, you know, aside from being the boys club, to get in, it's the first question I'm sure you get asked, as do I, you know, in your teaching role that you do as well, is like, okay, great. Yeah, I'll get all of the experience, but how did you actually get in? Because it's really, and unless you know and know somebody, to get in, you know, you either fall into this industry, as we hear a lot of people do, or you might know of people, which is where a lot of our staffing comes from. It's people that know people.
Yeah.
But there are some really great incentives out there, which actually myself and Joanna Croxford, who I facilitate the TPG sessions with, have been collaborating and collecting and have actually put them up on my website. They will go up on the TPG website as well as another colleague of ours, Lottia, who's also kind of put together these resources lists. So there are tons there, and it's about now shining lights on them and getting people aware of them as well, which is, I think, a lot of people are becoming less blinkered. Yeah. I mean, almost sometimes there's so much it can be overwhelming, I think, but how many programs are out there? But that can only be a good thing, hey, you know, that this work is being done.
Yeah, so agreed. And you know, we're, again, going back to a lot of people on that diversity session being like-minded, it was interesting hearing, you know, the Wob Roberts story also about how, you know, he somehow found himself being with friends in gay clubs, you know, and he didn't mind the environment. He was actually comfortable there in a lot of ways. But Glenn would ask him, well, how did you really feel in those gay clubs with your friends, you know? And then he would say, well, you know, I kind of felt like I was, you know, one of a kind, or a fish out of water, or, you know, not exactly, you know, my environment. And Glenn's response was, well, that's how we feel all the time, everywhere we go. And I thought that was incredibly poignant, you know, just to see that. And then, you know, somebody like Richard Young also following up with, you know, questions of, well, moving forward as a production manager, how can I understand this better? How can I move forward? What are the steps I can take to understand this better? And I think it's all down to another thing Glenn kept pushing was communication, talking with one another, you know? Do you agree? Mm.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of work to be done, especially within all of the areas that I mentioned prior, you know, with mental health and sustainability and DEI, especially with DEI, because I think it's a subject that requires unpicking of stuff that we don't even realize has been embedded in us from, you know, from our childhood, from around us, society. And that unpicking can be really uncomfortable. And I've seen people come into the sessions that have stuck around and been on their own personal journey of, you know, of doing this unpicking, and others that have not engaged with it for whatever reason, you know, think it's tough out there at the moment. But for whatever reasons, let's hope that, you know, we can engage them in this communication moving forward. But I do think, yes, absolutely, communication is really important, but there's going to be a huge difference between the communication and the doing. And even the people that I know that are doing this work, having had some really frank conversations quite recently, I do think we are still like a gap away from talking and understanding and realizing what needs to be done, but then making that shift to actually do it. Because let's face it, when we go back to work, we're going to pick up, like, especially in some of the projects that might have already been ongoing and put on hold, we're going to be rehiring those people because there's loyalty and they've been booked in some cases for those shows. So when we pick up from where we left off, we're not going to really make those changes. Okay, yes, we might be aware now about how to reach out and find other people, but people being vouched for a lot of the time, because we don't have the opportunity as production managers and hiring people to like take that opportunity sometimes to go, well, can we try them? Can we not try them? But then if we're not giving people the chance to start with, how are we ever going to make this change? So this is the real work that we're kind of quite concentrating on at the moment, is to figure out how are we going to bridge that gap to really make these changes? And so even talking about this for the last 8-9 months, and I have to say, it's been a personal journey for me too. Like, absolutely. There's so, and I'm still learning. I mean, we all learn every day, right? But I'm still really learning, and I'm kind of involved in connecting and speaking to a lot of people and hearing a lot of views and stuff. But yeah, how can we really make this a real reality for when we go back up and not just talk about it? Because that would be, well, it just can't happen. It just can't happen.
Yeah, yeah. Lots of talking and no action to back up those words. Yeah, I totally get it. Going back to the IPM roundtable that we had, and I thought, you know, Bill Leabody had a great thing that Coldplay was going to do. And the reason I'm bringing this up is us as production managers need to get the managers and artists we work with to buy into this along with us. Because at the end of the day, it's going to be their money. It's going to be, you know, how they see themselves. But, you know, what Coldplay plan on doing is hiring six people who are inexperienced, you know, and giving them a job, almost in an intern position, probably a paid intern position, putting them on the bus, putting them on the plane, putting them in load-ins, and giving them the on-the-job experience. And at the end of the day, that's really how you're going to learn. It doesn't matter how much you've been in the shop or how many load-ins you did as a stagehand or whatever. I really think you need to just do it, you know. So we need to find those opportunities. And I think it starts with us having these conversations with the managers and the artists that we work for to get them to buy into it. And I think a lot of them will. If we're able to present it in a way that works for everybody, I think we can. There's going to be the artist out there who may not want to hear it and may not pay attention to it. But, you know, if we can get more to listen than don't listen, then that's us doing it instead of just talking about it.
Who's not in this day and age now with everything that's going on in this world, who's not going to want to diversify their crew, particularly if that's, you know, that in the area that we're talking about, who's not going to want to make their tour more sustainable for their environment? you know, who's not going to want to have better mental health welfare on their tours. Like, if you do, you know, and some of these things don't have to cost a lot of money. They just, you know, they will. There will, of course, be costs attached to some things. But people, I do feel like there's been a shift. It feels like there's been a shift. So yeah. I can't imagine how managers and artists, you know, in fact, the program that Bill, where he's getting some wonderful women, because we know them, they've turned up to our sessions as well as Freya and AJ who ran the 3T program, which is where Bill and Coldplay will have these kind of interns, if you like, to call them that, although they have been doing quite a lot of work now, was actually started off by a management company, Native Management, and an artist, which was born out of, I want to diversify my crew more. Can you please go and find me, you know, look further? And then on looking, this person who was hiring couldn't seem to find, you know, to fulfill these positions, that whatever positions were being sought out. And that was when this kind of incentive got born out of that. Now, that's not to say that there aren't, you know, women, people of color out there who are already existing in the industry, but we're just, you know, well, again, Live Nation made a black, I think it was Live Nation, yeah, a black directory of you know, people that are working out there. It's just they're not in our network because our address books aren't, you know, diversified enough, really. Yeah. And that's what this period of time is about now as well, is about connecting and, communicating. But no, absolutely, I do. I mean, that, as you know, going back to my point, that was kind of born out of an artist noticing and saying, well, come on, hey. So yeah, I think that this is, you know, this is where us as within, we want to apply it to our world, right, within touring specifically, something that we can change and can control. So I think people are very aware, becoming very aware, and if they're not, then this is what we're doing. We're making them aware of it and thinking and asking them to stop and think. Right. So we can make these changes.
Yeah, it's that old saying, if you're not mad, you're not paying attention.
Yeah,
you know, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, if I might interject here just a little bit, because hearing you both talk, and of course, diversity is kind of a very hot topic now because of the inequalities that are blatantly evident in our society. But coming from, I was a minority in a field. I'm in healthcare. I'm a dietitian. And so when you work in hospitals and you're working with nurses and therapists, it's predominantly female. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because it's not just doing the right thing, but when you have a diverse culture, the culture itself is more psychologically healthy. You know, when you're in an environment that's just not a monoculture and you have people from all different backgrounds and opinions, there's so many other benefits besides just say, hey, we're a diverse community. It's like I just pulled up this article right here and I could show it to you, but just because I was looking into it, but here's a study: teams solve problems faster when they're more cognitively diverse.
Yeah.
So you actually see an improvement in production. You see an improvement in problem solving. You see an improvement in overall well-being and happiness in satisfaction in the workplace when you have a more diverse culture.
Yeah,
and so totally. There's just so many totally. Benefits besides just doing the right thing, but you could actually have better outcomes on many levels. I mean, because working in the music industry and touring, we all know how psychologically difficult that is. You're away from our families, you're up early, you're up late, it's very demanding. There's not always the support from everybody to, you know, I mean, yes, so it's a very supportive atmosphere. I've spent my time on the road as well, as Chris will attest to, but at the same time, I think that when we open up the doors to not just having people from different cultures, like say just in catering or just in wardrobe, but also rigging and sound and lighting, I think you get some of that crossover there. So I think that, you know, there should be Bravo to Coldplay But I think that, you know, they're probably doing it from one perspective, but I think at the end of the day, maybe a year or two down the road, when they really kind of get this ball rolling, that they're going to see so many other benefits to doing this besides just doing the right thing. So
Anyway, absolutely. It can't just be a box ticking exercise. And but absolutely, when we're all coming from different points of view and different paths of lives, to be able to bring that in, to you know absolutely what I said earlier, which is to create this creative pot from different perspectives, which can only be a good thing. But yeah, absolutely agree with you in that.
Yeah, because the reason I also bring this up, because I think a lot of people are going to jump on the bandwagon because it's the hip thing to do, right? So again, in healthcare, as a dietitian, I do a lot of corporate wellness programming. And a lot of businesses and corporations have corporate wellness programs because it's a hip thing to do, because, and it's all lip service. They have the program, they spend the money, they say they have it, but when you get there and you see what they're doing, it's crap. You know, it's just a coat of paint. It's just something that they say, oh yeah, we have corporate wellness, but they in practice they do, but not in theory. It's not part of the soul or the spirit of the business as it should be. And so, I mean, I'm just saying this from the standpoint that I hope more industries and certainly in concert touring and different bands do it, but not just because it's hip or because it's, you know, the end thing. Anyway, just had to throw my.
Oh, no, that's an incredible parody to our industry. But I think our industry is you know, as much as some people think it might be corporate, it's kind of not. I mean, we throw a bunch of people in buses and throw them around, and they hit the ground running during load in, and there's this mania of building a rock show. People start to blend together and turn into co-workers, friends, you know, all of it. So, you know, I would like to think that we don't have a coat of paint on our show. I think it's more of a it's more real time, you know.
So it's just a mirror of society, I think, you know, because men started in concert touring, and then, you know, they were doing the hiring to begin with. And then if we look at a lot of the kind of roles that we have within touring, there seems to be quite very gender binary kind of job roles that are assigned within the touring hierarchy and the jobs available on the road. And yes, of course, you see females in lots of different departments, but not that many. I mean, in a lot of the cases, you know, if we said set carpenters, you might be able to name, I don't know, 10 female set carpenters around the world, you know, perhaps.
Perhaps.
You know, it's very binary when it comes to gender. I think, you know, there are of course other female production managers out there, but not enough, not enough. I think, you know, especially when it comes to the world of touring, in the world in festivals, and maybe working for promoters, you'd see more females, but you know, certainly not that many. Of course, in production management, and right. If there are, please reach out to me. I'd love to chat with you more. But like, you know, yeah, of course. Again, I know lots, but again, not enough.
Yeah, I agree. How do you feel like tackling a little sustainability in industry? Feel like getting into that a little bit?
Yeah.
You know, I just read this morning that I saw that the O2 are going to put wind turbines in the venue. Which I thought was fascinating. You know, I mean, I don't think they could power the entire building with 10 wind turbines, but I think that it's a good start, and it's going to open up the eyes of all the other venues around, you know, the UK and North America of, wow, look what they're doing. I think it's a great start.
I haven't read that. So I'll look into that, you know, when we finish this call and see what the plan is for them. When are they planning on setting that up? Did they say?
I think they've just announced it, and I think they'll get the ball rolling. And you know, I'm sure there's a budget on someone's desktop. I guess probably.
Yeah.
Or maybe there's a contract in place with a supplier. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's probably the same in the States, but here in the UK, we are going to very soon start being taxed on certain things and having to commit to, like, you know, doing better in creating ways to be more sustainable. And so maybe this is, you know, one of those ways for sure. I don't know how effective the panels I keep getting through my door, put solar panels on your roof, and I need to look into that a bit more. I don't know how effective that is. I was actually having a conversation with somebody about electric cars the other day, and kind of, I'm very interested in getting one, but I need to research more into, because certainly the culture that seemed to be here when I called to inquire about electric cars was like, no, only lease the car because you'll want to change it in 2 years because there'll be new technology. And my immediately I thought, well, surely that can't be very sustainable if the kind of culture is being taught to like change that every 2 years. Like, what happens with all the, like, that car and all the batteries and everything? Like, I don't quite get it, so I need to look into that a bit more as well. But
well, one perspective, yeah, on that would be if you leased it and then you put your car back into, you know, the sales force, I mean, they're, you know, into back on the market is people who can't afford a new one, you know, so yeah. The secondhand market's probably going to be very robust. So
yeah, well it got kind of said to me, this lease person said to me, well, yeah, because we don't know how long the batteries last, so you know, you want to kind of change it out every couple of years. And I thought, okay, maybe that person wasn't such a great salesperson, or I'm not sure. It's just something I need to look into.
I know someone who has one of the original Teslas from 2010 2011. He's got about 170,000 miles on it right now.
Oh, right.
Changed the brakes, I think, once or only twice. So, I mean, okay. The that's longevity great, yeah, of the batteries can be pretty good. I mean, at this point, I haven't talked to him in a while if he's had to put a different set in, but it's a pretty long time.
Well, that's pretty impressive. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I had a conversation with Shannon DiCarlo from Upstaging the other day, and I asked her straight up, I said, how far away do you think electric trucks are? And there was a pause, you know, and I don't think it's so much the electric truck, but I think it's the infrastructure to sustain,
yeah,
to an electric truck. So I kind of see, you know, in 10 years down the road, all venues are going to be, you know, instead of shore power, or maybe it's some sort of shore power situation where they, you know, trucks will need to charge on site, you know, that kind of thing. How far can a truck go? How far can a bus go? You know, so I don't think that technology is around the corner, but I think, you know, it's being thought about, you know. So back to sister. Go ahead, Matt.
Oh, no, I was just going to say the latest Elon Musk, Joe Rogan podcast, they actually talk about that and the distance and the travel and the different type of charging. And I have a friend of mine who's actually he's part of the local transit bus company, and they're trying to switch over to electric. And what would that be like? And so the pads, the induction, where they just have to pull the bus on, where the bus automatically charges rather than being plugged in. So there's a lot of interesting stuff there, but sorry.
Mm. No. But you know, I think a lot of the industry are focusing on, well, what can we do now? You know, and then there's, you know, have you seen the 10 easy wins? I'm sure you have. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
Some of it's very simple, but it makes sense. You know, let's get rid of PVC tape, use Velcro. Mm-hmm. I mean, little things like that just make so much sense. And as you know, as being a production manager, lots of small changes put together create something big, you know, in a show. Mm-hmm. You know, if you work with an artist that's constantly making small changes to the show, at the end of the day, it's going to be a great show, you know, and I take that ethos with me in that. So the things we are doing now, you know, I had a conversation with a caterer the other day, and he's got really, really great ideas, because, you know, the thing that was just shocking, and I told this to Andy Franks the other day, what, you know, he averages 20% waste, which I just, when he told me that, I went, you got to be kidding me, 20% waste, you know, so what are the things you can do to prevent food waste, you know, and the shopping, buy local, you know, it costs more, but you know, it's, you got to do that, you know, and another point is if you're touring with catering, maybe you order your meal the day before, you know, maybe there's this check box you can check of, you know, you go into the production office before you go to the bus at night and here's my meals for tomorrow. Because as you know, the caterers, if they do a meat, a fish and a veg, you know, they do enough meat and fish for just about every meal number there, just in case, you know, this just in case philosophy of, or how many times I'm guilty of it. I'll put my hand up. I'm guilty of it. When you're going over meal numbers, you went, ah, man, I don't know. You throw an extra five in there. You just to be safe, you know, you want to be covered.
And then the caterer puts another five on top of that as well, don't they? Just to be in case, you know, in case they don't want to be caught out too.
Yeah. So. And that adds up to our food waste, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not like we can bring this food somewhere else because the people receiving it don't know where it's been. You know, they don't know how long, if it's been hot and cold and hot and cold or, you know, yeah. And I totally get that no one's going to take this food. You know,
Chris, I need the local crew sometimes you can, you know,
yeah. Or how many times have you gone into a dressing room during loadout and there's all these plated up dishes of food in the dressing room that were put there and they didn't get eaten and they're going to get chucked. I don't know. I think we could be smarter. I mean,
smarter. I think you're right. There is, I'm sure, a way, but yeah, it's, because you'd like to think, well, food banks and stuff like that, there could be a way. But as you say, it's like where this food comes from, getting the food there, how is it safe to be reheated and heated again, and how that, thinking through that process. But yeah,
In the United States, it's not legal. You cannot. It has to be canned, packaged, unopened food for you to donate it to any of those locations in the United States. So, yeah. I mean, we've taken food for granted, right? Where it's just, you know, we're flooded with sugar and food all the time. And
Chris Mitchell's the caterer I spoke to the other day, and he said, this is bringing the food to a hog farm, which I thought was kind of interesting. I don't know, you know, the hogs benefit. I don't know if the farmer pays for it or whatever, but, you know, at least it's not getting thrown away, you know. I thought that was interesting. You know, Keely, I would like to know, you know, I've heard a lot of your philosophies, you know, which are, you know, very current and a lot of things people need to be paying attention to. And I commend you for trying to bring this stuff to the limelight. You've certainly brought some new information to me. And I, because of my knowing you, I'm looking at the world differently. And thank you for that. But I want to know more about you a little bit. I know you've done lots of things in this industry. I can't trace your lineage back very far, but I know you're a tour accountant at one time. You know, you've done just about everything there is to do in building and coordinating a show. I know that you had a company called the Production Office for a long time. So I wouldn't mind hearing more about, you know, your growth in this industry. Where, how did you start? What's your introduction into our industry?
So I'm a classic example of through family and nepotism, how I got into this industry. But, you know, that's not taken away from how hard I worked to get there. But I actually first started, going way back, my mother was in the industry, but before I was born. Actually, by the time I was born, she'd left, but she worked for an agent's NEMS and also was Mark Boland's PA. And that, she made great friends that remained her friends when I came along later on. And one of our family friends was Juliet Slater. And so Juliet was, looked up to her. She was in the music industry. And when I had decided that's what I wanted to do, which was pretty early on, I, you know, from the age of, I don't know, 12, 13, I wanted to get into the music industry, and I got various kind of work experience through Ed Bicknell, who's manager and went on to be an agent, and is obviously still quite
he's dire straits, right?
In the industry. Yeah. And then I bounced over to a PR company that looked after U2, and yeah, did quite a lot of work experience. Any time I could get out and get involved, I absolutely did. And then Juliet very kindly sorted me out of some work experience with Harvey Goldsmith. And I got plonked into this festival site, I don't know, at the age of 18 or something, 17 or 18, something like that. And it was the Total Eclipse Festival site. So that was my kind of real, like, first experience of a festival and production, and kind of being plonked into this world of living on a bus, stationary it was. But, you know, got my first taste for it, really. And then kind of sat around for the next 6 months going, what am I going to do? And through people I met from being on that festival, they said, hey, there's a job going with Graham Dixon at GLD. They were sharing the offices. It was AAA. So Dennis Arnold and Jean White called me up and said, this is a job going, would you like to interview for it? And so I ended up getting this job working with Graham Dixon and Tracy Collins in the office, based in the office. And GLD did all the backstage furniture for every tour that came through the UK, and also, you know, went off wherever else they went. And we also did some really, like, crazy, great, out of the box kind of production. So I got involved in kind of production management and event organizing through that job at GLD. And I was there for about 3 years. And through that, I'd made friends and met this gentleman, Chris Vaughan, one day. And he said, I said to him, I'd love to go touring. And he said, oh, great. Yeah, you should talk to this person, that person. And then I think he called me up 2 months later and said, hey, I've actually got a position on a tour. Would you like to work on it? And I said, great. Yeah. So I left there and then ended up doing my first ever tour, which was a 19 management tour, S Club, something like that. S Club. And then we went on and did a German superstar tour. And then, so I worked for about a year as a production assistant with Chris. And then we started another tour, a Sarah Brightman tour in 2004. And by the end of that tour, by 2005, we decided, you know, we'd kind of like ran all the finances and produced the tour together. Well, not produced the tour together, but we kind of like born out of that, said, why don't we start up a company? And so in 2005, we created the production office, and then together we ran that for 10 years. So, you know, it was an amazing experience for me. I got to work with a wonderful guy who was very supportive of my career. And, you know, I production managed my first tour when I was 23 or something, and wow. Terrified, absolutely terrified. Wasn't sure, I like, you know, I'm not sure about this. I guess it's like that for everybody, really, isn't it, when you get thrown into the deep end. But yeah, so kind of went through from club through to like stadium tours, and did the odd kind of big events, special events. We did this Edinburgh 50,000 steps. It was a kind of a continuation from the Live Aid that Bob Geldof did, and like some children in need TV shows and stuff like that. So I really got like a very well-rounded experience, kind of going through from production management, tour management, tour accounting, and really, yeah, did quite a lot within those 10 years with him. And then that kind of came to its natural end, and started up my own company in 2015 called Global Touring Office, which is what I've been doing, you know, ever since. So more of the same stuff, really.
Right. But yeah, well, Global Touring Office is kind of a little different, in my opinion, because, you know, you're trying to educate. You're trying to, you know, show by example. You know, the one thing I looked on your site is your tour glossary. I think it's incredible. I think,
oh yes, please contribute
really,
to that.
Really cool. You know, it has, you know, touring terms and also crew terms. You know, so what is this crew person? What do they do? You know, if you've heard what is a video director? I mean, I know what video is and I know what a director is, but what does a video director do on a tour? So you kind of explain what that is. And also, you know, the glossary of just, you know, show terms, you know what is a, you know, what is a buyout? You know, I mean, just all these simple things, which I was really thought it was fascinating, you know?
Yeah, and we talk another language, right? Don't we? We don't realize we talk another language, or we repurpose words as well. That's what we do so well and apply. They mean they have a totally different meaning within the touring.
I know your company's building, and I know part of your site says coming soon, this kind of thing, but I really look forward to seeing, you know, where you take it, because of course you're offering a service. Let us produce your event. You know, we will take it from the inception. We'll build it and produce it and, you know, and help you with that. But beyond that, I think you're offering just a little bit more. You know, you're trying to, you know, you're taking people more by the hand, you know, and it's almost feels more personal in a lot of ways. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I mean, you know, a lot of that has been born out of this time right now. And also recently I've done a bit of lecturing and we're basically produced a course for managers as part of the Music Managers Forum to talk about live and touring, because, hey, we're not actually touring at the moment. So let's talk about it. But yeah, like try and give our insight as production, like what would you want managers to know about and what's important, and also, you know, how a way of kind of shaping going forward. But so a lot of the stuff that's come out of the website recently is like, what would I want to know if I was, you know, just starting out, and what, you know, what can we kind of provide that's in my head that we can share that, you know, doesn't this is kind of part of the, like, making it more accessible and not so secretive, because that's how we're gonna get more, you know, young people kind of excited about the industry, which we need an influx, and making it more accessible, really, because half the time I don't think people know we really exist, you know, who puts on these shows, and if they do know, they think it's really glamorous, which it's not half the time. I mean, obviously there's lots of great moments that we have, but yeah. It was something born out of kind of a combination of that and really just trying to also have a place of all the kind of learnings that have been going on with over this period of having one source of where I can most of the time refer to, you know, store it and stuff. So that's the story behind that.
Yeah. You know, your site is really attractive too. I don't know if you had somebody do that or you did it yourself, but I thought it was beautiful the way it's laid out. Oh,
thank you. Thanks.
The one thing that I'm going to have to be a fanboy just for a second here is, you know, your participation in producing Kate Bush. I can't even imagine the amount of pleasure, you know, that you've got out of that. I mean, I have to ask you what it's like to work with Kate Bush. I just have to.
Yeah, it was such an amazing experience. It really was. And it was one of those shows that was quite a pinnacle and pivoting moment within my career too, I'd have to say. But, and I have to say from the start of when we first started speaking to her to the end product, nothing changed. The vision was there all the way through. And that was quite amazing. So even, you know, going through the process of trying to make this vision work was quite an interesting one, along with this mixture of theatre-based people. So we had like a lot of the key positions, like the director or the creative producer came from a theatre and was theatre, is theatre, and kind of marrying it with the world of rock and roll, you know, if you like, which was very much like what the show was, two halves of like the rock show to start with, and then the theatre show, the second half. But it was, when you're in it, you're like, wow, this is great. This is all running, and people were, you know, turning up, and so what more can you want, you know, from a show? It was very strange to be somewhere for such a long time. Like I haven't yet done, maybe one day, I hope it's on my list to do a Vegas residency, but that, you know, that's the closest I've been to like having.
Be careful what you wish somewhere. For.
Well, do it once, right? Try everything once.
Yeah. Well, you know, I know a little bit of the history of why Kate Bush never worked after that. I one of my dear friends, his name was Gunji Patterson. I don't know if you know that name, Gunji Patterson. He's passed away. He had a cancer thing coming up on 10 years ago. But he was the front of house sound engineer on her 1979 tour off of her first record. And they were doing a show in Cornwall. I believe it was Cornwall. They had finished the show. They had finished Loadout. And the lighting director, which I forgot his name, he went, "Oh, I left my jacket in the venue." So he left his leather jacket kind of out by the front of house or whatever, where the mix position was. And this venue in Cornwall, which I think it was, had kind of like a Las Vegas morphing ability to move seats, and one thing kind of flipped over, or maybe there was hydraulics that moved things around. And he ran back into the venue in the dark to look for his coat, and there was a big hole in the floor was opened up that he didn't see, and he fell, and he passed away. He fell to his death in that hole. And Gunji always said that that Kate took that incredibly personal, that, you know, that you know, was her show because she was there. This man would be alive if she didn't decide to do what she was doing, you know, and she took it personally. Now, I don't, you know, I can't say that's the only reason she didn't work between 1979 and 2014, but I know she took that really hard and personally, you know. And Gunji, you know, for years, and the tours that I did with him and the tours I visit him still to, you know, to the end of his life, tuned his PA to Kate Bush. You know, he would play Babushka through the PA system to tune the PA every day. And I always thought that was a great way of him to continue honoring her, because, you know, he mixed Judas Priest and heavy metal, but, you know, he was really at his heart, you know, he wanted to mix Kate Bush, you know, so I always thought that was fascinating. But I remember speaking to Chris Vaughn about that back in 2014, going, "Man, I am so jealous of you right now. I'm just so fucking jealous of you being able to, you know, do all the shows, never mind just see one, you know?"
Yeah, it was definitely an experience. It was like, there hasn't been anything like it since. And so, yeah, it was definitely a pinnacle and turning point in my career, for sure, or one of them.
Yeah. And I know, you know, you're big in mentoring, you know, and I believe Chris was as well. Another friend of mine that came out of the production office was Patty Hawken too. You guys kind of latched onto him and brought him into the fold, didn't you?
Very much so. Yeah. Paddy and I think we were, I don't know, he might tell the story differently, but in my mind, we were sat on a plane going somewhere on this was on a Muse tour, and he was a PA tech at on that tour. And I was like, "You should be a production manager. Why don't you come and join us?" And then, and then things happened. I don't think it happened straight away, but he eventually came and joined the team, and he was there for 5 years. Until the end, really. In fact, it was the end. He's, you know, brilliant. Seeing the growth in him as a production manager, and he's off doing wonderful things. And, you know, we speak very often. And hello, Paddy. He's probably listening at some point. definitely was an asset to the company. And it was part of the vision to really try and, you know, expand. And the great dream for Chris and I was one day to, like, stop being on the road and then be able to have this company and send people out to do. Because what we found quite early on with one particular tour that we did in America, where we'd set up the tour, and of course, as you know, when you set up the tour, that's the toughest part, right? Once it's up and running. And with this particular show, it was like born the new concept. And by the way, the show's gone on to run for another 15 years. But we were like, we gave it structure and we put it all together. And then I think we brought somebody in. And then in the end, that they never came back to us because, hey, we can go to that person. It's cheaper or whatever, for whatever reasons, you know. So we kind of had said, you know, this is not working. We need to kind of bring people in and on a more full-time basis and rather than doing like freelance. But in saying that, we did also have projects where we brought freelancers in who did the tour, and we got the tour back, got the client back at the end of it, and it was all fine as well. But we felt it was like a way to grow, you know, to eventually try and get our plan of having this big office and being able to not go out on tour. But actually, we love touring too much, I think.
I agree.
And so
I agree. So, it's, yeah. You know, our lives are so different now, you know, do I miss getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning? No, I'm not going to say that I miss that, but you know, I do miss the energy of being around people who are all have, you know, bought into the same thing that you've bought into and have this common desire to do the best job they can. You know, I mean, do they want the artist to be happy? Do they want the show to be great? Yeah. But you know, I think it has a lot to do with, you know, how we count on each other, you know, and how you said something about your first production manager job. You were scared, you were fear, you know, I hope you never lose that. You know, I mean, I think fear is very important with what we do, you know, and not that I'm biting my nails or I'm shivering when I go in the venue, but I have a genuine fear of letting people down, you know, whether it be the crew people next to you, you know, and it can be as simple as, oh man, I didn't tell him. He needed to know this and I didn't tell him or her. And I kind of let them down a little bit because I, you know, so it's a constant drive for me to not want to let anybody down, you know, and that is a strong vehicle. It's a strong tool, I think.
Yeah, it definitely keeps you on your toes, right? But as long as we can balance it, and I know you mentioned to me in one of our conversations earlier about the meditation thing, for example, about, you know, has helped you in this time. And I think, you know, in the position that we're in, we do feel so much pressure. There is so much pressure because, oh, if I don't deliver this, all these people are going to be disappointed. And obviously, you've probably heard or probably used or, you know, we're not saving lives here. Is it really that important? Right. But to us, it feels like it because we go, oh, you know, if that doesn't happen, or I forgot to do that, or I didn't tell that person, or I didn't do whatever, then everything can come crashing down. And but trying to find a way to balance that. I really wish that from an early age, I'd built in a habit to like learn how to meditate and find a way to put back in to the bank rather than just taking out all the time. Because of course, I agree with you, there is a certain amount of adrenaline that's needed in order to like push you through doing the job, some more than others, for sure. But also we can't, you know, our mental welfare also has to like, you know, stay there. Otherwise, if we fall over, then everything else might also, you know, tumble as well. So basically looking after ourselves is equally important. So however that might be. And, you know, sometimes I find on tour that I have to just find some solitude somewhere because perhaps all of that, you know, being around people and, you know, I think for the most part, I had been quite an introvert, you know, and that to me, it takes a lot to be outwardly facing and sometimes quite draining. So on tour, sometimes I might have to find, right, I've got to go and hide in my bunk for like 10 minutes and just like recenter and then come back. But basically finding out what it is that gives you, that balances you to like, you know, reset you basically, because it's constant, isn't it? Sometimes on tour. But no, if I had practiced meditation early on, I think, and that was like inbuilt to me. I'm trying now, really trying.
It's hard. I never would have been able to learn to meditate on the road, but now during this break where I've had a lot of time by myself, I live by myself, so I've got time to learn to meditate. It's very hard. But I want to go back to your comments about not saving lives and, you know, but we feel it's very important. You know, for me, you know, during a show, if something doesn't go right, an effect doesn't work or, you know, the show wasn't working at its optimum. And let's just say, for instance, Matt Bellamy's piano lift didn't go up during the show. you know, for some reason the piano lift didn't work that show. And and it just, you know, that's disappointing. You know, that's something that would bother me. I mean, after loadout, trying to sleep that night, it's something that I take with me and I internalize, because, you know, we all want the show to be the best it can be. And I want to surround myself with people who are also aren't sleeping that night, who also, you know, I want people to buy into the show. I want people to take ownership of this project along with me. I can't always do that. You know, there's going to be somebody who went, you know what, I work for the video company and I'm just going to do my video and I'm going to go to my bunk. And, you know, if the show doesn't work that night, I'm going to have a great night's sleep no matter what. I mean, there are people out there and I can't force everybody to be as passionate about the show as me, but I agree with you. We do feel like we're saving lives sometimes. And I hope I never become complacent with a show. And, you know, when Matt Bellamy's lift doesn't go up, and if that doesn't bother me anymore, then I probably would have to find a new thing to do, because we're saving lives in our own way, in our own little way. We're saving these little notions.
We're creating entertainment, which is hopefully giving the audience and the fans, you know, an hour and a half of great entertainment, which, you know, helps lift whatever might be going on in their lives for that moment. And I think that's really important, is, you know, providing a service to people to have enjoyment and to have that escapism for, you know, however long that experience might be and that show. But I think, you know, the point of course these things will bother us, but trying to find a way where it doesn't take over you, so that it becomes crippling in any way, or, you know, you learn from your mistakes. You're always one, if they're not. And sometimes mistakes have to happen time and time and time again, unfortunately, before you really get it. But, you know, you wouldn't say that in the world of show. Next time you get it right, obviously. But yeah, it's trying to find that balance between, okay, that happened, that was shit. But actually, I need to sleep tonight, because if I don't, then I'm going to wake up the next morning and I'm going to be crabby, or I'm not going to be very, you know, I'm not going to be my the best me. So trying to find a way to like diffuse that, yeah, I think is the key. Not to say it doesn't bother you, but just like, so it isn't like going over and over in your head to the point where it just drives you mad. And finding that balance.
You just got to care, you know, you just have to have that level of just caring. It's when you don't care, you know, that you just like, oh, well, hey, it happened. So,
yeah.
And, you know, not to keep coming back to this whole thing of like, you're not saving lives, but I will tell you that I know people who save up and will look forward to a concert for months, and a good show might be the highlight of their year, kind of thing. And so the music is so important to so many people. And I know, you know, this stuff, but being on the inside, you know, out of the 10,000 people that might be in the audience, there's at least one person out there that you might be saving their life. You know, from the standpoint of just joy and happiness, that one little glimpse of like, my life is shit, but this is like, oh, I'm amongst my people, or this is my favorite artist or whatever. And I mean, I know people like that. Music means so much, and they could be looking forward to the show for months before it actually happens. And then they come out of there just glowing. You know, and that show is just so amazing. And you've met those people, you know, the people who have the passes, who go back, who are wide eyed. They're like, oh my God, that was the most amazing thing ever. It's like, it's pretty powerful stuff.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it can be, powerful. It's important. It's why we do it, right? You know, if we didn't have people buying the tickets and enjoying the shows, then we would be out of a job pretty quick. So, no, it's super important, and also, you know, we're all fans of our own artists that we. I mean, going to a concert for me, there are certain people that still I'm blown away by, and doesn't even matter like if you know all the tricks and the trade of how that works. It can be so powerful, absolutely.
I think that one of the greatest things about working in the industry and why it's so fulfilling is because I strive to continue to do this in my life, but you're actually part of something that's bigger than yourself. And when you're part of something that's that big and that important or that impactful to people, and it's, you know, more important or bigger than yourself, and you're just part of that, you know, community and that group and that, you know, community effort. And I think it's very appealing. I mean, I haven't done a lot of the touring in a long time, but I always, God, I wish I could go back, but I know the other side, but I can't, you know, that kind of thing. But yeah, there's a lot of draw to it.
Yeah, it goes back to the original ethos of Bill Graham, you know, when Bill Graham started producing shows in New York and San Francisco, it was all about the audience experience. That was first and foremost, the most important thing to him always was the audience experience. How can I, even if it costs me more to produce the show, how can I improve the audience, you know, experience? And I hope that doesn't get lost, you know, in the future, you know, and if it does, I'm not interested in working for that organization, you know, that's just, you know, capitalistic and it's all about the money. Because, you know, I mean, on this podcast, we talk a lot when I've talked to other production managers and other people in the industry about the thrill of the house lights going out. You know, I doesn't matter who I work for, you know, whether I'm a huge fan or not, you know, the house lights going out is one of the best feelings you can imagine, you know.
Totally. And 100% very, you know, very, very addictive. Like it's very, you know, the hair stand on the end of your arms and it's nothing that I think I can compare it to when you've got, you know, 15,000 screaming people in a hall when the lights go down. It's quite and it happens night after night, hopefully. You're working with the writer.
Okay, well, it's we're coming up on mid-March. It's pretty much everybody's anniversary now. We're coming up on 1 year since we came home from that last project. We're pretty much right at that year. And I'm hoping the industry is feeling as optimistic as I am. I really think that we're going in a great direction. Are we ready to do shows? No. But as you know, as production managers, we have to start preparing several months ahead of time. So I'm starting to see glimpses of people talking about doing shows, you know, and what is your take? What are you hearing, feeling about things being a year into this?
So I think that if people aren't planning, then it's definitely not going to happen. We know that for sure. So I have also heard people kind of early on summer. So like June, then possibly if that's not going to happen with the, you know, pushing it into July, or August. Festivals kind of here in the UK certainly are looking towards moving towards the end of the summer rather than the beginning to try and give them half a chance. But yeah, there's certainly like festivals on sale.
Reading and Leeds, right?
Obviously, Reading and Leeds, obviously, yeah.
What month is Reading and Leeds?
I think it's August or it might be September this year. I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, that doesn't sound completely out of bounds.
Yeah, and in terms of tours, like UK-based tours or tours where that artist is based, or if not based, their main shows are, rather than moving from country to country, especially with the whole Brexit thing at the moment. So yes, we are seeing like UK tours towards the end of the year with... Actually, I've seen international artists as well. It's not just UK-based artists. So yes, there's definitely plans afoot and things happening. Whether or not that will actually, you know, come to fruition, then we'll see. But if it's not being planned, it's not going to happen, is it? So fingers crossed that kind of everything settles. I mean, I don't think international touring will happen for a little, you know, obviously 2022 is when the whole world seems to be going out on tour. And a lot of people I know that had thinking of going out the start of 2022 are now pushing it further later in the year. I think also because of the programming, right? There's going to be that infrastructure can only support a certain amount of artists going out on the road. There's only going to be a certain amount of buses. There's only going to be a certain amount of trucks. There's only going to be a certain amount of, you know, personnel and all the rest of it. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we start seeing things shift, like, even a little bit later. But stuff will happen for sure.
Yeah. Do you have any, you know, not being specific, but are you beginning to work on anything? Do you have anything in your on your radar right now?
So I do, but it's not a touring thing. It would be more of a broadcasty thing. But in terms of my touring clients, they aren't really, 2022. You know, definitely nothing before that.
I mean, a UK tour only. I mean, because obviously the UK is an island. It's separate from the continent. There's going to be issues that need to be figured out, whether it be COVID or whether it be cabotage or whether it be visas. I mean, all these things need to play out. So I think it's going to be a while before people can pop in and out of the UK. But, you know, I mean, there are artists that can make a significant amount of money just working in the UK. It's not going to be a long tour, but, you know, it's, but they still can do that. But, you know, being able to go to the continent and back, you know, that's going to be well into 2022. I mean, Italy is still out of hand. I saw something in the news today that Italy's having another spike in COVID. So yeah, that's going to be a while. And I, I don't know who's heading this, but you know, the whole visa thing and the whole cabotage thing really needs to get sorted out. You know, that it's not that, you know, Boris Johnson didn't have a little memo on his desktop about the touring concert touring industry. So I'm sure that was overlooked, but.
Yeah. Know. There's a campaign here. I think it's called Carry On Touring, which was a petition that was made by Tim Brennan. There's new newsletters and the website's gone out now and stuff. So people are joining that too. And obviously a lot of people initially signed that petition. That's I think been discussed in Parliament two or three times now. But yeah, I think the trucking companies are finding ways around the cabotage thing, you know, as it stands at the moment. We'll find a way to make it work. And it will settle down as we go along, as you say. Sure.
Yeah, you should open up a visa processing service from your company.
You know? No thanks.
That might be the time to get in on that. You know, I know that's
no. I think we'll have enough. Yeah, work to do.
That is a thankless job, I'll tell you.
I was going to say maybe we could charge more, but actually no, that's not going to happen, is it? Yeah, like, yeah. We just have to. It's just going to be part of the parcel of doing it. But no, I think I'm pragmatic about it and hopeful that, you know, when we get to it, we'll figure it out. And there's so much information that's constantly being updated. So just keeping, you know, up to date with that and see and monitor the changes as and when and if they happen.
Yeah, we're lucky over here. I mean, being an American production manager that works primarily in North America, we're not going from country to country, and it's a big space, and we can do a long 40 city tour here and still make a living and get that done in 2021. I'm not so sure we'll be able to go in and out of Canada just yet, but you know, that could be a while. But we're lucky over here.
Yeah. There's before you could do 40 cities. Now you're going to find all of these other venues popping up that you never knew existed as well. Pop a few more cities onto there too.
Yeah, well, we could probably do since Texas doesn't give a shit, you know, maybe we can do a full tour of Texas, you know.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, Mississippi, you know. So your client base is impressive as well. I've looked through your you've got Beyond Kate Bush, you Take That, and Anastasia, and Dido, and Lily Allen. You've managed to cultivate a really nice client base, and do you find that do you stay in touch with these people? Do you always keep in tabs on each other?
Yeah, we are. I mean, aside from the work side of like, are we going out? Are the shows happening? I have good relationships with my clients, So with Anastasia, she was, when I started this company up, she was one of the first clients that I had. So So that's been, you know, a really great building relationship over the years. And actually with Dido too, I was working with her when we did some promo stuff in kind of mid 2000, I don't know when it was, 2013, 14, something like that. So that's been quite a long-standing, you know, relationship as well. And it's great. I love, you know, I absolutely adore working with them. And Lily has also not been out recently, but again, has you know, that was 2018 we started working with her. So yeah, it was it's great. And also we recently worked with DJ Marabou State, which we did a Brixton Academy. Well, actually, guys, it wasn't that recently. It was quite a while ago now. But yeah, a different kind of genre of music, and has been, you know, I look forward to them. I think they're writing or written an album now. So I look forward to see more what happens with their next album. But yeah, I wonder how many albums all of our artists are going to like end up come out of this period having written. Because, you know, I spoke to a friend who's a producer the other day, and I said, you know, how's it been for you? He said, yeah, it's been really, really busy because everyone's just sitting and writing music and now we're producing it. So it's, you know, from that side of the music industry, at least that's been ticking along.
Yeah, and everybody's going to want to, you know, play it.
Yeah.
The one thing I keep saying is, you know, and I've said it to managers and I've said it to a lot of people, is that, you know, we need to be ready, because how awful would it be to miss out on the recovery? You know, the recovery is going to start, and the people who are ready and the people who have, you know, thought about it are going to be the ones who benefit from it. Because, you know, as Matt was saying, people want to go to shows. People are dying to go to shows. Yeah. And again, let's not miss out on the recovery, because we need it. I need it. You need it. Our crews need it. You know, the vendors need it. The travel agents need it. The hotels need it. Everybody needs this recovery to kick back in, you know? And again, it would be a shame for us to miss out on the recovery.
Yeah. Yeah. That's hopefully what we're, you know, all doing at the moment is talking to each other. And it was one of the things that, when the TPG first came together, or the conversations that were coming like way back, it was like, well, when we do start up again, we're all going to want to start back up together, and we need to kind of come together and work out how and when. And I know like the agents are kind of saying there's so many pencils on each venue, and you know, unfortunately that's not going to really help with sustainability, because people are just getting availabilities where they can. In terms of sustainability, we'll be going up and down the countries, you know, not ideally planned like we would hope to. The tour be routed how, you know, you would like to have it. But it's going to be tough, I think, to start with. But if we talk to each other and we try and somehow in an ideal world work together to you know, come back together so that we can all work alongside each other, then you know, that would be the dream.
Yeah.
You know, hope that we could do that.
Conversations, you know, and
yeah,
and the brilliant words of Glenn Fussell, let's keep talking to each other, you know, let's have conversations, let's you know, get rid of that outdated language and turn people onto a whole new thing, you know? So I'm on board, you know?
Yeah. There you go. Well, and I were taught.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, you know what? I really don't want to be that one of those people who just talks about it and doesn't do anything about it, because, you know, we're all guilty of it. We're all, I'll pat myself on the back. Oh, we talked about it. Oh, we're so in tune with each other, but you know, you got to do it.
Yeah.
You got to do it. You know?
Agreed. Yeah. Yeah. We can hold each other to account as well, you know, like in a supportive way of like, hey, remember that like promise that we made to each other about how we're going to, you know.
Hypocrisy.
And remind each other things like mental welfare, you know, doing this first aid training. I don't know if it's over in the States. It probably is, the MHFA. That's something I would definitely recommend doing, which it's like a, well, I did it over 2 days, but it does go over 4 days training. So that's something, you know, things like that we can do and get prepared for.
Yeah, and back to the beginning of this podcast, we were talking about informing your crew, you know, maybe there needs to be some sort of orientation at the beginning of a tour, you know, maybe some one of us clever people will find the right people. Maybe we can do an instructional video of some sort that we play.
Funny you mentioned that.
We play for everybody. You know, we can watch it all together in catering, or you can all watch it individually on your computers in your hotel room. But here, just let you know, this is how this tour is going to operate. This is the things we will not accept. These are the behaviors that we will be paying attention to.
It's funny you say that, because it's a conversation I've really recently had, like well, we discussed it quite a while ago, but just today I was like, no, we've got to do this. Like, we've got to, you know, let's start writing down and producing and put something together. And so, yeah, no, definitely. I think sometimes visual things are good as well. Yes. Okay. We can write, you know, we can produce a document, but sometimes, I mean, really, there are so many documents to read when we come back to this. So how are we really going to get through to, because everybody's going to buy into this. Everybody's going to be on board to make
safe space. We can't get people to read our call sheets.
No. That's it.
You know, so we'll, you know, they just look at it. Oh, my lobby call is 8 a.m. Okay,
good. I'm going to bed now. That line.
Even though they're going to ask a question the next day in the production office that we clearly laid out for them in the call sheet, yet they'll ask that anyway. You know, Keely, one of these days, I would love to be able to wear a matching laminate with you and walk alongside you and do some cool stuff together. I think we would have a good time. But I really thank you so much for bringing your ideas and your a little piece of yourself here to our humble little podcast. It was really fun chatting with you.
Yeah, absolutely. That's been an hour and a half. Wow, that's flown by. No, it's been an absolute pleasure, and thanks for having me. And I really hope you come to another TPG. Make sure you're on that.
Please send me the invite. I don't know if one invite is good for all of them,
we'll make sure you're signed up. But yeah. Absolutely look forward to the day that we can produce a fantastic show.
And you know what, I don't really know Joanne Croxford either, so I really, she's very intriguing. I look forward to getting to know her a little bit more as well. And you know what, I'm sure my podcast mate here, Matt, would be interested in seeing that as well. So if you don't mind, I'll forward that details to him as well.
Absolutely come join, be part of the conversation.
Matt, any parting words for Keely?
Well, no, I was just going to say that it was great to actually play a part in this podcast more than any other. I think I've spoken more here.
It's about time. He's always says, you know, I say, Matt, why don't you ever, he's like, well, you know, I'm kind of the fly in the wall here. I kind of like just to sit back and watch him, but you know, maybe this will be the beginning of him.
Maybe,
well, we'll see.
I get a little hippy dippy around the whole idea of, like, you know, wellness and, you know, and people coming together and stuff. And so it's like when that kind of conversation comes up, it speaks to me a little bit more. So thank you, Keely. I appreciate it.
Thank you
all the amazing, fantastic work you're doing. I know it's not easy, and I know you're fighting the current and the tide in some cases. And we need more people like you to speak up and keep pushing. So thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Okay.
All right. Thanks, guys. I'll speak soon.
All right, guys. Take care.
Take care.